It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 5.8.
When zombies take over the world, we'll start a business selling chocolate-dipped brains.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And we have with us Diana Rowland. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you're the author of My Life as a White Trash Zombie, which Jen believes is one of the greatest titles for a book ever.
Ever. Seriously.
Thank you. You know, there was actually some discussion for a while about whether we should have white trash in the title. My agent editor kind of went back and forth, like, you know, wondering if people would be offended by it. And finally decided, no, it's the kind of book that if you're offended by it, you're reading the wrong stuff.
Yeah. I married into a white trash family and they own it.
Right. Right.
I mean, most people who are white trash are like, dude, I'm white trash and it's okay.
Yeah. And it's not insulting to that.
No.
Socioeconomic.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, if you're like my grandpa fulfills all the white trash stereotypes that, mm-hmm. you know, of course, mostly the redneck stereotypes of Jeff Foxworthy. But you would not think that he was white trash, although they did find cars in his lawn. And they mowed it. Three of them, in fact.
Were they hidden by the lawn?
Yes.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Okay.
Anywho, so first things first, we should get right into the book. So what kind of drew you into zombie fiction? And, I mean, why are you writing it? What kind of drew you to writing, too?
Well, you know, I used to work in a morgue. And part of my job at the morgue was taking out the brains. And I one time was joking about, oh, how, look at this. It's such a waste that we just basically throw it away. Or it goes in the body bag. And I joked that it would be a great thing for a zombie. And that's kind of how the whole idea of it started up. Easy access to brains. Why wouldn't a zombie work in a morgue?
So true.
That actually, you totally just stole one of my questions from me. Thanks a lot. Because a lot of this book sort of is showing Angel going through, like, learning how to work in a morgue. Mm-hmm. And all the just grossness of morgue life and the dead body jokes and just all sorts of that. And I wondered, you know, did you work in a morgue? And obviously you did. So...
there goes that question.
Yeah. I mean, why did you work in a morgue? Well, I mean, did you get caught like on cocaine and like they forced you into one?
I used to be a cop. I was a police officer for almost 7 years. And, for a while, the crime lab, would go to autopsies to take the pictures, during the autopsy, for the record of the autopsies. And the coroner's office wanted to transition to using their own people. And so I was offered a job to go over there and do their forensic photography. So most of my job was the forensic photography. I'd take all the pictures during the autopsy. But during most of the autopsy, there's not a whole lot of picture taking. And so that's how I started out, just helping out with the rest of it, doing the brain stuff, getting the vitreous, sewing the mac back up and that sort of stuff. But no, I did not get caught with drugs.
So, quick question, though. I mean, you mentioned that, obviously, working in a morgue drew you to writing about zombies, but mm-hmm. you also have another series about demons, and which one did you want to write first?
Well, I wrote the demon series first, and that's a police procedural series, and that right. was written while I was a police officer. So that's drawn from a lot of experience, too. All my experiences as a cop, as a detective, and even my time in working in a crime scene investigations. I draw on a lot of personal experiences with all of my books. However, I've never summoned a demon. Never.
I was going to ask.
Did you, I mean, obviously you got into writing while you were in law enforcement and everything, but did you ever, were you ever interested in writing straight police procedurals, or did you always want to do the urban fantasy take?
Well, I've actually got into writing a long time ago. I think I wrote my first book, back in like the 90s. It was this long epic fantasy, like 150,000 words of every possible stereotype you could ever imagine. This thing was bad, I'm telling you. You know, every stereotype, every trope. It had the main character was a woman with flowing red hair who was an expert swordswoman. Yeah, there was no wish fulfillment in there. Then I went to a writer's workshop called Clarion West. It's a 6 weeks a workshop for short stories, geared mostly towards science fiction and fantasy. And I learned a lot about actually how to write, which is kind of a good thing for a writer to have, is that knowledge of how to write and, you know, craft and plot and pacing and that sort of stuff. And so I started working on short stories after that. Then I took a bit of a break while I did the police work. And then I came back, started writing short stories again, sold a couple more, and then decided I wanted to write novels. And I wrote Mark of the Demon. And the rest, I guess, is history.
Indeed. Yeah, I only asked because my aunt actually wrote a series of mysteries. Mm-hmm. And I keep telling her, I was like, you know, if you want to get on the urban fantasy bandwagon, it's selling pretty well right now.
Well, actually, you know, I kind of forgotten your question when I was going into all that.
Okay.
Yeah, I have been wanting to do some straight procedural stuff. Now, I love science fiction and fantasy. That's going to always be my first love. But I started more of a thriller type procedural several years ago. And then more recently, I've outlined out a procedural that's not quite urban fantasy, but has just a little touch of a mystery, horror, maybe a little paranormal in it. Because I think I always like that little what if aspect to books. But I'm going to definitely try and write a book that's not like urban fantasy.
Gotcha.
Excellent.
So that kind of takes us to the next question. Because my aunt actually lives in Mississippi. So, you mm-hmm. know, it seems to be a popular location for mysteries first, but it's also a really popular location for urban fantasy. Obviously, zombie fiction. We just interviewed someone else who had written a Southern zombie fic. Mm-hmm. So why do you think the South is such a popular location? I mean, you have the history of the Southern Gothic and everything, but it definitely is a pretty strong place for the urban fantasy mystique.
I think it's because there's such a broad range of the type of people who live in the South. It's not all just hillbillies and rednecks. You have a lot of, you know, high industry along with suburbs, along with, you know, pretty thriving cities. And then you also have that subculture of people who you're not quite sure you really want to hang around with because they're very set in their ways. I mean, we still have people who hang out the Confederate flag around here and it's just like, okay. And I think it's because there's so much to draw on. It's like New York. You see a lot of stuff set in New York. Same kind of reason. Right. You have such a broad spectrum of characters and settings that you can do anything. It's a lot of fun.
Makes sense to me.
Now, staying, we got a whole lot of questions about zombies. So get prepared.
Okay.
One of the interesting things I thought about your zombies is that they're kind of almost a mixture of like zombies and vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have to eat to heal and survive, and like if they don't eat, they become like monsters because the hunger is too much.
Yeah.
And they also have special powers. Like, you know, one of the moments in the book, she basically gorges herself on brains and becomes like Superwoman,
right.
Only without the flying.
right.
But so I guess what kind of inspired you to divert from the sort of traditional, like, Romero-style
zombie? Well, mostly zombie. Because, you know, my main character was going to be a zombie, so I couldn't just have her keep rotting and rotting and rotting. There's, you know, only so far you can take a character like that. So she had to be sentient. She had to still have an intelligence. And so I had to work out something where she still needed brains, but that she wasn't just a hopeless case. Because I don't think people would really want to read a book where you know that the person's just going to end up falling apart in a gambling heap. Just kind of, you know, I didn't feel that would be an appealing character. So I had to work it out where, yeah, I suppose it is kind of like a vampirism thing, except for the fact that there's people who want to be vampires, and I don't think too many people want to be zombies. So it's not a desirable thing. I see that as the big difference. And when I wanted to make her this character have something bad happen to her, I didn't want it to be something where there was any niceness to it. So she's leaving this horrible and background to go to something possibly equally horrible, but for her it is a step up. And so I wanted to go into that more. Mm.
Do you think that we're going to see more stories that kind of move away from zombies as like just the brain-eating monsters that...
Oh, they're already out there. There are quite a few zombie books with the main characters. One just came out. Oh, and I'm blanking on the name, but it just came out, I think, last week by a male author. Oh, I wish I could remember the name. And then The Loving Dead by Amelia Beamer. There are quite a few with zombies as main characters. Because it's a different look at the monstrous. That's one of the things about urban fantasy is you're looking at the reality turned monstrous. It's a literalized metaphor. All of urban fantasy, all of fantasy really, is literalized metaphor. The zombieism was basically a metaphor for drug addiction, for getting her off of that. I think you're going to see a lot more because it's new ground. It's something different, you know, people can do. Plus, not that much has been done with zombies, so there's a lot more ground to break, so to speak, and you can be more original.
No, that's true. And I think with one of the interesting things about your book is that it is somewhat kind of like a crime novel. There's a narrative that's there that's sort of like the finding out whodunit. But there's also, it's mostly about sort of angels, like, coming to terms.
It's a coming-of-age story, and as one of my critiquers said, it's an origin story. This is her origin story of how she became what she is.
And obviously you have more books planned.
Yeah, I'm actually working on the second one right now, Even White Trash Zombies Get the Blues.
That's an awesome title.
And I thought the first title was so good.
And the third one is going to be White Trash Zombie Apocalypse.
Nice.
Oh, so, that sounds like bad stuff's going to happen.
They are planned out.
That's awesome. What would you say is a zombie's morality? Because in this book, and I don't want to give too much away for those who haven't read it, they should read it. But your villain is not who you expect the villain to be.
Right.
He or she or it could potentially be anyone.
Right. Well, as far as the morality goes, I think the whole point is that the morality has nothing to do with what kind of monster this person is, or rather being a monster has nothing to do with whether you're human or a zombie or a vampire or whatever. It's all in the person. And that's something she ends up going through and trying to figure out.
Yeah. And the monster ends up being, you know, less monstrous.
Right.
You know, all the monsters really in this are a lot less monstrous than one would think based on the title about being a zombie in the first place. But okay. I want to go back to your point about, you know, the zombieism as a metaphor for her addiction and her drug abuse, because obviously she is a drug addict and that's what she's kind of coming out of. But she, you know, that's not fixed. She's still a bit of a drug addict. And, and without the drugs, obviously she turns into a monster and she falls apart. And although usually drugs make you fall apart even with drugs. But yes, so go ahead.
That was one of the things I wanted to get at is she's still an addict, but it's an addiction she learns to control. The same things that made her a drug addict could make her a true monster if she allowed it. And part of her journey and part of her, you know, growing up, she had to do was to make a decision on, you know, who she wanted to be. Did she want to just become this horrible creature that went around killing people, or did she want to get her life back together grow up basically?
Right, and becoming a zombie, oddly enough, gives her that opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just like a, you know, really, really harsh methadone therapy, you know.
Very good point.
Yeah, and I did find the substance of her substance abuse and it's throughout the story of in various ways. I mean, you have the father who's an
alcoholic
drunk, awful human being in a way. And then also you feel really sad for him.
Right, because one of the things I've always been bothered by in some sort of fiction is the evil character who is evil because he is evil. No one is, well, very few people are pure evil or pure good or anything like that. People who do bad things often think have the best of intentions, or they have redeeming qualities. So, you know, I wanted my characters to have more than just two dimensions, because I think that's more fun to read anyway. It makes for a more compelling story and more interesting characters.
It makes for a more complex character.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, instead of just having, like, well, this is the good guy, this is the bad guy, you know, the dad is bad because he's an alcoholic and he's
right,
violent.
Then you can, okay, I can hate him, but, you know, it's more fun if you go, well, you know, yeah, he's kind of a dick, but this, so.
Yeah, yeah. Jen, did you wanted to cut me off before, so what do you got?
No. I did. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Actually, I'm still thinking about the you know, drug addict metaphor, because you have an interesting crossover, because you have drug dealers on both sides. You have the people mm-hmm. peddling the actual drugs and yeah. then people who are peddling the brains.
Right.
And controlling the distribution of the brains and whatnot.
And there's good and bad on both ends, yeah.
And good and bad on both ends, you know. It was a nice. I hadn't really thought about the book in terms of that narrative, but it's, and I'm not sure why I didn't pick up on it the first time through. I think I was just having fun with the concept.
Uh-huh. Well, Angel picks up on it.
Angel definitely picks up on it, and she recognizes that because she controls her own source. That gives her more control over everything, because when
right.
you're dependent upon another source, it makes things much harder, and you are more likely to turn towards the darkness, becoming the monster. So,
right. And in the second book, there's going to be a more exploration of that, of you know, the supply of brains and how many zombies can be supported by a supply of brains. And the same thing with the people who you think are good may not be. And I think some people are going to be really shocked by some of the stuff I do with some of the characters. But I don't like to follow the tried and true, these people are good, and so that everything good will happen to them in the end. So we'll see what people think of it.
Right, and that happened obviously in this book as well.
Right.
I was very unexpected in it, I have to say. I was going to cut you off.
Okay, go ahead. No, go.
Because I really was curious about this. Were you concerned that a romance between zombies who occasionally start rotting and have to eat brains to survive, which I'm sorry, it's just gross. Were you concerned that that was going to be less than sexy, especially for something that is an urban fantasy, which, you know, let's be honest, it usually do contain romances.
Yeah.
And I mean, yes, it's also a mystery and everything, but.
Well, yeah, that's one of the reasons why the sex is pretty much behind doors in these books. Cause you know, I could have a sex scene and it could be funny as hell with things falling off and like, dude, you need to tank up my brains, but I think I'd lose readers. Like halfway through, they'd be like, oh no.
But
yeah,
there are
admit.
Lots of jokes.
Maybe someday
in this.
I'll do like, you know, an extras, a free story somewhere with, you know, the actual sex scene, just like my website or something, because it would be really funny and gross. Not a turn on, not at all.
No, and I think it's really funny that you say one of the, I can't remember the exact line, but it's mentioned a couple times in the book where, you know, that sex is, would not be so great if you were not tanked up, because
right.
things would fall off.
The brains first.
And I remember the zombie joke. Oh gosh. The, you know, I just left.
That was originally a leprosy joke that I heard many, many years ago. And what did the leper say to the whore?
Oh,
but you know, I totally agree with that.
And zombies as lepers. That's
yeah. Oh goodness. My mind's gone to really places that we should not cover.
Bad.
Right, exactly. I think you should have a disclaimer, perhaps. If you have a weak stomach, probably not the best book to read.
Well, I would hope that if zombie in the title would give
zombie
it away,
in the title,
the brains
right.
are going to be involved somehow.
I've had more people say that the raspberry syrup part was the part that turned them off. Where I mentioned we're bread pudding and raspberry syrup. That's usually where people are like, oh my god.
Yeah, I think every time she consumed tomato soup with
you never make tomato soup the same, huh?
And it's my favorite soup. Thank you, Diana.
This is lumpy.
I'm hungry now.
Why do you think I eat salads, huh?
All right. Sean, you were going to say something.
Go I'm going to leave this substance abuse thing. Because I would imagine as a police officer for so many years, I mean, a lot of what you do with Angel must be informed by some personal experiences.
Yeah, I've seen a lot. And actually, even before I was a cop, I worked in a casino. I did that for 6 years. And there's a lot of addiction there, too. It's a different kind of addiction, but same sort of thing where you just watch people destroy themselves. But yeah, we'd have the same problems with you'd see the same people over and over with petty arrests and drug busts and that sort of stuff. And in the morgue, when I first started working in the morgue, I was shocked by how many of the people who died were drug overdoses. I was absolutely stunned by that. And it's just, especially painkillers. You don't see as much of, well, at least we didn't see as much of the really hard stuff. It was painkillers. So yeah, a lot of it was informed by personal experience. But actually the number one thing that was informed by personal experience was her driveway that was paved in beer cans. I actually went out to a house once with a driveway paved in crushed beer cans.
That's hot.
Whoa.
It was the nastiest house I've ever been in. This house was so filthy.
Yeah, I mean, you do an incredibly thorough job of describing the home life that she has, which, you know, really is falling apart. And, you know, her father obviously isn't making any attempt. And up until this point, she isn't making any attempt to improve on that.
She's kind of avoiding the situation, like, you just have some beer and leave me alone. Kind of.
Right.
And for people in that situation, it's not easy to get out of it. You try to find so many circumstances and other people's opinions of you. And yeah, a lot of people do reach the point of like, why bother? They can't see a way out. There aren't really rehab facilities available unless you have lots of money. And we used to see that all the time too. People would have, you know, severe drug addictions or they end up almost killing themselves, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And theoretically, yeah, you get committed for 72 hours for evaluation, but realistically, there aren't enough beds. There aren't beds for it, and they can't do it. So a lot of people don't get the help they need, and it's really sad that the funding isn't there, that the help isn't there. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people just completely trapped in their circumstances, and it's not just a matter of willpower. It's being able to change a lot of things. Right. It wasn't just the fact that she got turned into a zombie, but it was also the fact that she got a job.
Right.
And the zombieism was her impetus to keep the job. And that's really what caused her to grow up. She knew she had to keep this job. And it wasn't just because, oh, I have to pay the rent. It was, okay, if I don't do this, her first fear was going to jail. And then it was the, oh my God, I'm going to rot and fall apart. So.
Right. I mean, it's interesting that basically her life, before she becomes a zombie, her life is rotting away into nothingness, you know, and her home is really the reflection of that existence. And then now she's a zombie. She could literally rot away, and she seems to recognize the rot that's kind of around her.
Yeah. You know, she stopped caring before, and now suddenly it's in full focus. The whole thing is in very stark relief, and she has to confront her demons and actually make a change.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I'm really proud of this book. I think it's the best thing I've ever written. So,
having not read your other stuff, I have to say it is really good. I mean, it's good on a lot of different levels. It's a good mystery for our listeners. Read it because it is a good mystery. I really was not expecting the ending at all. I'm not sure why, but I was totally duped by everything.
Good. And, I love hearing
that. Yeah, and the characters are they're very genuine. So. And you really do feel for Angel's circumstances. I mean, she comes from a crappy home life, but not because of anything that was in her control or even her father's control.
Staying in that home life is in her control, and so she's able to change.
Right, exactly. And that's. But she can't change that until she gets the job, and she has reasons for doing it. So it's a really nice read on that level as well. So and plus you do pick up on the, I mean, obviously you're from the South, correct?
Originally. Yes, I've been here all my life.
And you you definitely do a great job of describing the South. So I love Southern books because my family's from Natchez. So like every time I get to read books about the South, I'm always like, yes, it's like home all over again. So They have a nicer part of Natchez, but anyway, I'm sorry. I'm rambling now. It's the plague.
Yeah. Well, no, staying on Angel, because I think one of the interesting things is that the book doesn't start with her being terribly sympathetic, but that it's sort of a development. Like, as you know, at first it's like, oh, she's just a druggie. She found, like, almost killed herself, and she's just kind of a loser, not going anywhere. And then you kind of realize, you know, you get more info you get about her, the more you realize how complex of a person she is, and that, yes, she has sort of in a way given up. And I think that's really, really, really good about the book, that it is that coming of age story. That, yes, I mean, there's like this the crime mystery aspect, but I just really like her, just reading her talking and ranting about things was just really, really interesting.
Yeah, did it right.
Which leads us to Sean's next question.
Yes, which is Angel's voice. You write it in a sort of semi stream of consciousness, first person. Mm-hmm. I mean, what did you find compelling about writing in this perspective, and what was sort of most challenging about writing that kind of perspective?
The first challenge was shifting from the voice of my character in my other series, who's an educated woman in her, you know, educated cop in her 30s or almost 30s, to this barely 20-year-old who has very little education. And I had to really dial back my dialogue and my vocabulary sometimes. But just the mannerisms, I really had to get inside her head a lot more. I had a coworker who, she's not really based on this character. Angel's not really based on this person, but her general manner of speech and attitude and everything else was a lot of what I used. And I kind of had to think, I was like, oh, you know, what would this person do? How would this person react? That sort of thing. It was interesting trying to step back and into that character, and it was a lot of fun.
Sean,
Jen, what? No, oh, you're making me. Oh, okay. Going on to another question. Well, I think we kind of answered this, but maybe you could kind of go into it a little bit more depth. But I mean, we kind of keep mentioning the crime part of it, that it becomes maybe the last third of the book is sort of focused on the mystery of who's killing all these people and taking their heads. And Angel thinks it's one person, and then it's, you know, it turns out maybe me another person, and then it's like, oh, who's doing what? And then the like clues don't line up because it's like heads are being taken in different ways, and it's like, so I guess, I mean, why did you kind of want to write this, like this latter part of this book as being essentially a crime story? What was kind of the impetus for making this not just a book about somebody coming of age as a zombie?
Well, a lot of it is. Because of my police background and the coroner's office background, I like mysteries. I like writing that sort of thing. And also, I wanted to show that she was smart. She was smarter than what people gave her credit for. And by being able to figure everything out, that's a great way to show that she's smart. She has to overcome a lot of adversities, figure out who the killer is, and save herself and save others at the same time. And she realizes during the process of figuring it all out that, hey, she's not as stupid as she's always been led to believe.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see her going through that realization of, oh, I am a capable human being.
Yeah.
It wasn't, sorry, I had a train of thought and I just lost it. So I'm going to go on to my next part. One of the nice things about this is that some of the victims of the crimes that she sees, because are not crimes necessarily, but some of the bodies that come into the morgue really allow her to reflect on what's going on in her own life. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the one in particular, it's a woman who comes in and she was a suicide. And and Angel, you know, was finally able to see, oh, well, okay, you know, this could have been me. Other people have problems too. It's not just me. What made you want to include that sort of reflective process?
Because I think that anyone who's around death a lot, you can't help but become reflective about it. I know I went through it. Anytime you see someone die, there's a part of you that goes, okay, that could have been me, whether it was like this a weird freak accident or a car accident, or something tragic or even intentional. And it affects you. There was a freak accident that I went out on when I was in crime scene where a guy was trying to move a truck and move a block under his truck, but the truck was really heavily loaded. When he moved the block, the truck fell down and, well, he was killed. I won't go into too much detail. It was this bizarre freak accident. And you stop and think about the fact that he never had a chance to say goodbye to anybody. And death comes very quickly sometimes. And so it kind of shapes your worldview of you live every day as much as you can because you never know. Anything could happen to anyone at any time. And so I think that was important for her to reflect on, simply because if she's going to work there, it's going to happen. And in her situation, she needs to do a lot of reflecting, and it's going to change her entire worldview and whether she wants to fight for staying alive and being a normal person instead of a monster.
How much – okay, let's go with this. Why – a white trash zombie? I mean, why not an upper middle class zombie, for instance?
I think part of it is because of my coworker who I based it on was that she admitted herself that she was white trash. So it was a fun place to start. Also, you want to complicate a character who has a lot of room to grow. And my God, Angel had a lot of room to grow. So there will be other zombies along the way during the series that will be more upper class. Without giving too much away, there'll be some that are very, very upper class. But I think that to have a fun story, a good story, something interesting, you got to have a lot of challenges and obstacles in the path of your characters. And so you got to admit it, Angel has a lot of obstacles. And
oh, a ton.
having her overcome them, I think, makes for a much more interesting story. Plus, I had white trash in the title. I mean, it would be kind of boring. It's like, I was a middle upper class.
Right? I was an upper middle class zombie. What?
I was an ultra zombie. Yeah, you know.
You could be a 1% zombie.
Exactly. I get my brains delivered.
Which so would what probably not be as interesting now that you think about it. Yeah.
Well, it might be.
I don't think there would be as much conflict.
No, that's for sure. So one of my favorite characters is actually the Dr. LeBlanc. Because he's
so cool. I like him.
Right. One, he's cool. Two, he's the only visible guiding hand that Angel really has. I mean, obviously when she gets into the job, people are impressed by her, her work ethic, because she's desperate, granted, but right. She does have a good work ethic because of it. And two, the fact that she's fairly quick, and she can handle the crap, you know. Mm-hmm. But Dr. LeBlanc really seems to give her those pieces of advice that she needs, much more visibly than the guiding hand that's in the background that, you know, you don't find out who is until
right.
much later. Did you want to have, I mean, obviously you put him in, but was his initial point to be that kind of
no,
guy?
No, he really grew. He originally was just going to be the guy who cut the bodies open. And when you're in autopsies, there's a lot of conversation and that sort of thing. And he just developed into this really, really warm figure. And I love him too. And there's a lot of people like, oh, I heart him so much. Yeah, he's one of my favorite characters.
He becomes kind of a father figure in a distant sense, because he's still the boss, their only conversations are pretty much over the bodies. But, especially with her father in the state that he's in, where he's just not capable of offering that fatherly advice, it was nice to see her have something. And she does have it from a couple of different characters, but he was, I think, the most surprising.
Yeah, and it was really neat as it developed, because he did become this sort of father figure, and she seizes on to that, because she's always craved that sort of level of support. So this is something she's never had before. Even her teachers in school, very, very rarely did any of them give her that sort of support. And so suddenly it's really the first person who gives a shit about her and doesn't care what her history is. It's just you're a person and you should be kind to people. And so I will be kind to you. And it kind of developed from there. No, I really like him. He's cool. He lives.
And the other, okay, so I'm going to go with the two other characters that I you hate them because they're bastards, but
I know you're
still
gonna say.
Incredibly amusing. One, Kang, obviously, who was hilarious. And then the other drug dealer who, you know, it doesn't have any redeeming qualities.
Clive.
Yes, you know, at all. Kang doesn't really have any particularly redeeming qualities either, but...
But there's just something about him that you like, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I loved the way that he deals with the brains and the frozen pizzas.
Yeah.
Well, he's got his distribution network, so... Which, you know, like I said, those 1% are zombies. I have to get their brains delivered. Pizza, special toppings.
Oh.
But it was nice to see that your drug dealers have no redeeming qualities. I appreciate
Clive's bad things will probably happen to Clive. I haven't really decided what. So
that's
see.
Always nice to hear. Bad things should happen to drug dealers.
Right.
I'm just saying. I mean, yes, to an extent, everybody does. You know, there's the whole grayness of life, but...
Yeah, but there's some dark gray and there's some light gray.
Exactly. So Sean has one last question about this issue of the substance abuse that I'm going to let him field.
Oh, well, I'm really curious. Do you think that readers who have or had substance abuse issues might come out of this book with a positive outlook on or for recovery?
You know, I really hope so. One of the things I really wanted to... do in this book is not have it be an easy answer. It's not, you know, there's not an off switch for it. She ends up with bigger problems in a lot of ways, but what she's given is ways to cope with those bigger problems. And so, yeah, I would really love it if people could come out of it with a positive outlook that there are ways to get help, coping mechanisms and resources out there. And sometimes it's just little things that can help you out. Finding, support network, finding those few people who are kind to you and who'll say, you know, you're not a piece of shit. And even if someone with a substance abuse problem reads and just says, you know, she wasn't really a piece of shit, maybe I'm not either. That would make my world if someone actually got that out of it. That would be great.
Right, because I mean, that's really what inevitably is the thing that helps her the most is, I mean, becoming a zombie is all well and good, but that's not what does it for her. It's having those helping hands.
And realizing that she's worth living.
And realizing that if there's people out there that are willing to help her, then she must be worth the help, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that was a really nice element to her backstory and the continuing story. So
yeah. I really want my mom to read this book, but I know the second that a brain is mentioned, she'll be out of it because she can't handle any gore whatsoever. Doesn't matter what it's in. It's like there's blood. She's like, I'm gonna go to bed.
Well, you know what's funny? I can't watch movies with gore in them at all. And now I have been elbow deep in bodies, and I have taken things out of bodies. But if it's on the screen, I cannot handle it. This is the hardest time. I have to look away or look down. And I think what it is when I'm in a real gore situation, my little hind brain, my lizard brain, gives me a self defense mechanism and says, this isn't real. This is just a plastic body. This is just body parts. It's not a person. But when it's on the screen, my little lizard brain says, oh, I don't have to turn anything off. And I'm like, so it's really weird. I can't watch horror movies at all. It's terrible.
I wonder if your defense mechanisms take a break when you watch movies. Like, we work already, thanks.
Now I'm wondering if I could actually handle real bodies, because I cannot handle horror movies either.
Yeah,
you're not alone.
It's like, I feel bad because I can't watch The Walking Dead. I'm heard nothing but good about it. I'm sure it's a wonderful story, but I can't watch it.
It's not that good.
Okay, good.
We are probably the only two people who can't stand The Walking Dead.
I just watched the last two episodes, and it was very disappointing. It's a TV show. I just tweeted Duke. Sean, it's a TV show that's completely predicated on people doing really, really stupid things.
Yeah. Basically,
If
you've seen Romero zombie films and every zombie film based on Romero, you've already seen this TV. You don't even need to watch it.
Yeah.
So, that's that. Yeah. I mean,
they totally need to make my book into a TV series.
Right.
That'd be much fun.
There's some great zombie stories out there, you know, like mm-hmm. yours and you know, the post-apocalyptic one that we just read. What was the book called? Why am I forgetting, Sean?
The zombie one?
Yeah, First Days by Rhiannon Freer.
Oh, First Days. Yeah, and of course the Reapers are the Angels from last year.
And Reapers are the Angels. There's been all these very intelligent takes on zombie fiction?
Well, my film agent said that zombie stuff was a very, very hard sell right now because zombies are so popular and everybody is shopping zombie stuff. And so the first instant that any of the studio people hear zombie, they just shut off because they've heard like thousands of pages now, apparently. So it's just so overloaded and glutted. It's almost self-defeating. And zombies are popular, so they're not buying any because they can't, you know, there's so much signal to noise ratio, which is a real shame.
That is a shame because it would be nice to have the intelligent.
Tapes. Ooh, intelligent TV. Ooh.
I know. Shocking.
And you got to get cable for that.
Yeah.
Although I have to admit, you know, the disclaimer of if you have a weak stomach, you know, when she starts rotting.
It would probably have to be cable.
Well,
the interesting thing is only people who've worked in morgues or with dead bodies or been around dead bodies can imagine the smells you keep describing this. Because I have no idea what a dead human body smells like when it rots.
It's, you know, it's like roadkill, but a little bit sweeter, if that makes sense. It's very distinctive. If you're walking along through the woods and you smell like a dead animal, it smells different than a dead human or one that's been rotting for a while. But you kind of have to smell it first to know. So.
I don't ever want to learn
on this show.
Not one of my top 10 things to do before I die.
Yeah. I think you're fine not ever experiencing that.
We'll just continue reading books about them.
Yes, I'll just imagine something that smells nice every time I hear about it.
Right. Smells like strawberries.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? No, that'd probably be bad, because there'd be people who, like,
okay, speaking of which, your decision to make her brains taste sweet, and what she describes them with chocolate pudding or something
chocolate chip cookies or gumbo, or everything good.
Yeah, was that more of just a product of her addiction, are you speaking from personal experience in terms of calories and whatnot? You know, I've never had menudo, but people like it, so.
No, never eaten a brain, but I figure that whatever the zombie-ism does to her, it's going to change her chemistry so that she wants to eat them. Otherwise, it's kind of pointless. So if she craves them and they taste good. And I already have been working with a woman who's a biochemist to figure out the exact process of zombieism. And it's not a virus either. Because she explained to me, and I'm going to have a hard time with this, she explained to me why a virus doesn't work. I don't remember how she put it. Because basically, with the zombie, the cells die, which would mean the virus would die too. So it's going to go in a different direction, which makes much more scientific sense, which is actually going to be a lot more fun. But that's going to be touched on in the second book.
That's fascinating.
I'm having to do all sorts of technical reading for it.
Right. I mean, well, there was that recent report about the zombie, what is it, zombie ants?
Infected with a parasite.
If you look at parasites, that's some freaky stuff. Scott Westerfeld has a book called Peeps, isn't that awesome?
It's an
amazing book. And that's the whole thing with what parasites do is just so freaky cool.
Yeah.
And the zombie stuff isn't quite going to be a parasite thing, but in that kind of general family.
So. Yeah. Anyone who has read Peeps, he intersperses between the chapters bits where he tells you about actual parasites.
Yeah. And different ones each time and how they work with the cycles and everything. It's fascinating. Yeah, like the liver fluke and those ants read the book. It's really good.
Yeah. It is a really, really good book.
On my list.
Well, I'm curious, because there was a report from some scientist, and I want to say it was the CDC, where they said it was possible they could have something similar to a zombie infection, which would be like a mutation between rabies and the flu. But that seems to me that would then be very
I think what that was is they were using the zombieism as an analogy for how it would be spread, for how that sort of thing would be spread. Because I know that they have this big thing on the website of the zombie apocalypse and how to deal with a plague, which is actually so clever.
And they just released a comic too.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Whoever's doing the PR, that's absolutely brilliant because it's a way to actually get people to pay attention. It's like, to beat the zombie, wash your hands.
Well, and when you think about it, I mean, if you just change zombieism to it's the super flu, like the same rules essentially apply. We're just now paying attention because it's cool. Crazy and fun.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's what made 28 Days Later such a fascinating take on zombieism was that it was this virus that, you know, just people went crazy. Not that right. they were necessarily undead, but that they were crazy and driven.
Yeah, like the Reavers in Firefly sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and it's a quick infection. It's not like Romero's zombies where they like walk around for like 10 years. Right. You know, the bodies die in like 72 hours or something. Mm-hmm. Or like 12 weeks. As long as they have nourishment, they keep going. But, right. And that's what's most terrifying about those zombies to me is like they run and then they like barf on you and then you're infected. That's it.
Okay, so zombie technical detail. Do your zombies have to go through a near-death experience in order to become a zombie?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I detail it in the book, but yeah, it's more of getting the body into a state where it will take this thing that makes the zombieism. I don't want to give it away.
It's similar to vampirism, kind of.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, and. Yeah, basically has to get the body into a very damaged state, and then it goes from there. I'm going to go into hopefully more detail about that in the second book. I don't want to do too much, because if I do too much, I'm going to get something wrong.
I know. I realize that's the most difficult thing about interviewing authors who write mysteries.
Yeah, I have to do a little hand wavings.
Like, a miracle occurs. I can't ask that. Oh, no. You know.
Which is why I didn't tell you who the bad guy is.
Yes.
Exactly. Or girl.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. I meant bad guy, like, generally, but I realized that is a male pronoun, so excuse me. Bad person.
Bad it.
Who the bad person is. Or no, I guess a bad... Well, no, because in this book, the zombies are technically people, even when they're crazy.
Zombies are people, too.
So we can't call them it. That's kind of offensive.
Yeah, that's not politically correct, dude.
Yeah. You racist, Jen. What's wrong with you?
What?
You were calling them its.
Oh.
It's okay. Offensive to zombie culture. Come on.
Yeah, this interview is over.
Well, speaking of which, we actually have one final question.
Okay.
Sean?
Oh, this is the final,
you
final question?
You always ask the final question.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Well, we've kind of mentioned these things, but we should have you tell them again just one last time. What have you got coming out, and where can people find you?
Okay, well, my next book comes out in January. It's the fourth book in my Kara Gillian Demon Summoner series. It is Sins of the Demon. And the first four in that series, well, the first ones in that series are Mark of the Demon, Blood of the Demon, Secrets of the Demon. You sensing a pattern here?
Yeah.
Sins of the Demon. And then next July, the second zombie book will come out. It's Even White Trash Zombies Get the Blues. And it looks like I'm on a every January, July schedule. For every January, a demon book's going to come out. Every July, a zombie book should be coming out. And right now, I have three of the zombie books under contract. And I think I have one more of the demon books under contract. But I'm pretty sure my editor's going to buy the rest in that series. So... things are good looking good.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be on contract for a while for zombie books.
I hope so.
200.
Oh my gosh.
That's a bit much for anyone.
Even White Trash Zombies go to the moon.
Oh my gosh. You can just imagine.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That would be tough.
I'd read that book.
Brains.
We need a crossover between
that would be actually really
urban
cool.
fantasy and science fiction.
White Trash Zombies in space.
That would be really hard with your zombies. I'm just imagining, like, economically.
Yeah, where would you get brains?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to mix it with Tang.
And can they survive on alien brains?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, they can't survive on animals, or it seems like that. So
that's right.
And they can't survive on other zombies either. So they can't, like, cannibalize each other.
Yeah.
It's an issue.
That's a good question. Stem cells. I mean, if they're going in space, I mean, maybe they could just, like, grow them at Petri
dishes. Growing bats, yeah. Yeah.
Which seems like, again, that gives us back to kind of the vampirism, like growing synthetic blood.
Yeah.
Like, well, growing synthetic brain. Is it possible?
There's some stuff about this in the second book.
Oh, yay! Yay! So everybody can look out for January, Sins of the Demon, and next July, Even White Trash Zombies Get the Blues. That's, God, this great titles! Great titles!
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Okay, so if anybody wants to send hate mail to us, which we will then send anonymously to Anna, we're not actually going to send you hate mail. I mean, this is just our little bit.
Gotcha.
Because we never get hate mail. Nobody sends us hate mail. You can do that in four ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
Leave a post on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.wordpress.com.
I'm mixing them up.
You did. You're screwing with me. Okay, what's next?
Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
Or Twitter.
Twitter.com/Skiffy and Fanty.
And Diana, you're on Twitter, are you not?
Yes, I am. Diana Roland. No okay. spaces.
Sweet. Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on and talking about zombies with us.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We try. Well, we will hopefully have you on again in the future. That'd be really great. Maybe next year around.
I would love to.
But, oh, yeah. This is awesome. We got to have like 3 zombie books every year because I swear we get a lot of zombie books. It's great.
Oh, cool.
Well, and we love zombie books, so yeah. That helps.
It's actually the only thing that scares me. I mean, this book isn't scary, but zombies actually the only thing that scares me anymore.
Really?
What about zombie clowns?
Oh, my gosh. That's no, that's evil.
He's going to have nightmares.
Okay, guys, so we're going to sign off, and thank you again, Diana. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we will see you all whenever we see you, which is probably
on Halloween with our special episode of
Jason 10
Torture Cinema.
Oh, no. Okay, go, we're going. There's no more. All right. See you all later.
Bye, everyone.
Caution. You have entered the podstruction zone. Please secure all podcatchers. Caution.
How's it coming, guys? You have
entered this won't go any faster if you keep interrupting.
Got it. Here's some steampunk, diesel punk, gothic punk.
Goth punk?
Gothic. Trust me on this.
Hey, you're the one who invited him to the show, Sean. I've got epic fantasy, sword and sorcery, and all the news on ebooks.
That's it. Check it out. Clock punk. Ooh, shiny.
I have space opera, time travel, Stargate, and...
Sean, is that He-Man?
Shut up. Boys, I think we did it.
A superior podcast.
Publishing, writing, genre, best-selling authors, and the hot new writers of today.
Editors and agents, contests. Did we leave anything out?
AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com.
Subscribe today. Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, your podcast for science fiction and fantasy literature since 2006.
Sean?
It's just so beautiful.
Podstruction complete. Enjoy.
Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
In your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you, always.
End of line.